You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
I'm Tristan Carcino.
And a little bit more upbeat this time because we have news on a replacement for Lorenzo Romar, is the men's basketball coach for the University of Washington. Early Sunday morning, they announced, is first reported by Jeff Goodman of ESPN, that they had hired Syracuse assistant coach and head coach in waiting, Mike Hopkins, is their new men's basketball coach. I guess your kind of first impressions, you broke this news to me.
I broke the news to you?
You did.
My first impression was that it was a very quick hire, much faster than I was expecting. And I was surprised that it was a name that I'd never heard before.
Yeah, it seems like given the speed with which this transpired, less than 24 hours after Syracuse's season ended yesterday and the NIT opening round, that this is pretty clearly someone that Jen Cohen had in mind. Jeff Goodman mentioned that she, much like Illinois, who hired Brad Underwood yesterday, did not use a search firm here and just kind of did this search herself. And clearly this must have been their first target, and he was willing to take the job.
Yeah, so tell us everything that you know about Mike Hopkins right now.
So most of it I've learned in the last 15 minutes or so here. I mean, was familiar with the fact that he was the head coach in waiting and, you know, coached 9 games last season while Jim Boeheim was suspended for NCAA rules violations, during which they went 4-5 over that stretch. So does have some head coaching experience of a sort. Was a player at Syracuse under Boeheim and by the Syracuse Athletic Department's account, a fan favorite, one of the most popular players in the program, kind of a very scrappy, overachieving type. All the cliches that you want to apply to it. I don't know if his Wikipedia was leaning into the cliches or they just actually were what people believed about him. But
had a lot of comments that need citation.
Yeah, very much so. But originally, before he went to Syracuse, from the LA area, played at Mater Dei High School in that area. And as a result, even though he had been named head coach in waiting, had gone after the USC job when they hired Andy Enfield and was very disappointed, clearly not to get that job, had been involved in other coaching searches, including the Oregon State coaching search. I thought this was an interesting quote from him. Hat tip to Christian Capel of the News Tribune for this one. Let's see. If I go, I'm going to a place where I feel I can be forever and win forever. That's my philosophy.
He used the term win forever and then said that's my philosophy after it.
He did. So it's unclear. What may have to ask him during, if we get a chance, whether he has a pyramid of success. But that does sound like a good fit for Seattle coaching. I will give him that.
You said Jen Cohen was looking for a Pete Carroll kind of guy.
No, I said I was looking for a Coach Pete kind of guy, not a Pete Carroll kind
of
guy.
Oh, the other Coach Pete.
Yeah, I mean, the one that she hired. That's I think, was the model in her mind for this coaching search. But obviously, he also has his own pyramid, if not necessarily in forever. And
What do you make of UW hiring a coach who's the head coach designate of another school?
It's surprising, certainly. But as I mentioned, you know, this isn't the first job that he's been interested in the past, and has presumably turned down some opportunities to be a head coach in the past because, you know, he didn't think the fit or the timing was right. Boeheim, the original plan was he was set to retire after next season, and then Hopkins would take over. Then he kind of hinted this year that maybe it would be this year, or that maybe it wouldn't even be next year. There's a little Jay Leno's succession plan, I feel like, to the Jim Boeheim succession plan, is my sense. So I think, you know, the one thing that Jeff Goodman of ESPN said on Twitter today was that the idea of creating his own legacy appealed to him. And I think it's not surprising that that's on the West Coast, where he's from and still has some ties. I think the big concern for Husky fans, naturally, is they're going to want to see, you know, what the contract looks like in terms of a buyout if he were to go back to Syracuse after next season. That obviously is the worst case scenario. What happened,
yes,
for example, to Oklahoma State with Brad Underwood, where he spent 1 year there and was on a relatively small contract and then immediately bolted for Illinois. Like, you know, my whole bold prediction on the last podcast, first off, the Eric Musselman one was clearly off, but my whole bold prediction that there would be another coaching search within the next 5 years, certainly I'm not thinking that it would be next year, and I don't think they would hire him if there was any chance of that.
This is best case scenario for that bold prediction, though.
Perhaps USC sounds kind of like his dream job, though, from his the way he talked about it, in terms of, he said he grew up a USC football fan in LA and a Syracuse basketball fan. So that actually would be the job that in some ways concerns me more, if that ever were to
really
come open. Yeah. I mean, you know, he said that, you know, when his kid, he was talking to his kids about the possibility of taking that job, that he was able to sell them on the fact that he'd be going back to see his grandparents, his parents, all that sort of thing. So
that they'd be living in LA instead of Syracuse.
that's
would pretty be, much it. That's all you need.
Would be an upgrade. But yeah, it's certainly is surprising from that standpoint. It'll be interesting to hear what he has to say about this in his introductory press conference.
Yes. What do you make of, what does this mean for the Huskies on the court next year? I mean, both, do you think we're going to move toward a Syracuse zone? And what does this mean for the current roster and recruits?
Well, I think the assumption you have to make without having seen anything of Hopkins is his own coach. I mean, you know, he's taking over temporarily when Boeheim was unable to have any contact with the team, but you're still not changing philosophically anything. So I think the assumption has to be that, yes, he'll be bringing the Syracuse zone. So I think about, you know, how UW's players fit into that and how kind of UW's philosophy fits into that. I think what Jen Cohen is probably thinking is that Syracuse has done a great job of turning athletic guys with a lot of length into successful defenses in that 2-3 zone. And you know, the Huskies are capable of certainly recruiting those kind of players. Those kind of players are available in the Seattle area, particularly the kind of guards you would want in the Syracuse zone. So I think that's part of the thinking. As I look at the current roster, Matisse Thybulle has the chance to be great in this zone. Already someone who led the Pac-12 in steals this season, has that length you're looking for, plus great instincts as a defender. May hurt him in terms of his NBA prospects a little bit, because now NBA scouts wouldn't be able to see him defending one-on-one on the perimeter in the same kind of role he's going to play in the NBA, and that's always been a challenge. You've seen that Syracuse players have often struggled to translate in the NBA, have been overdrafted in many cases, so that'll be interesting to watch. Noah Dickerson does not seem as ideal of a fit, since, you know, he's not a particularly big or long power forward. I'm sure they'll, you know, if he sticks around, that they'll find a way to make his skills fit. That seems like a tougher one. Sam Timmons, maybe not the ideal use of him. Post defense is probably his best skill, and that's a little bit de-emphasized in his zone. But, you know, he's also young enough that I think he could make that transition and pick it up. David Crisp, a little smaller again than the guard you'd like ideally at the top of the Syracuse zone, but they've had guys like that. Tyler Ennis was somewhat undersized and was very effective, and you know, I think his importance offensively. But you look at Dejon Davis and Jalen Noel and the Seattle parts of this recruiting class; those guys do seem to fit pretty well.
And you think could potentially be sold on a Syracuse guy who's put players in the NBA?
I think so, and I mean, you know, I think they're less likely to defect because of the fact that, you know, as important as Coach Romar surely was in their decision and their relationship with him, you know, they're also more tied to Seattle, to the University of Washington, to the basketball community here. So I think you've got a better chance of retaining those recruits, certainly, than you do the Porters, who I think, even though, you know, Jen Cohen said at her press conference announcing the move that she wanted to make sure that all the recruits met with the new coach before they made any decisions as far as letting them out of their NLIs, I would be very, very surprised if they remained.
Okay, and what do you make of the coaching staff going forward?
So I think the name to watch will be Jason Hart. I think that's already come up. Someone who played under Hopkins at Syracuse, and you know, I think was instrumental in perhaps recruiting him at that point. He's currently an assistant at USC under Enfield, and has garnered a reputation as perhaps as good a recruiter as there is on the West Coast. So that would be a huge coup, I think, for Hopkins if he was able to hire Jason Hardaway from USC, which would probably mean increasing assistants' salary relative to what the Huskies were paying under Romar, where they were low in the Pac-12 pecking order. I would assume that you would keep someone for continuity from the current staff. You know, Will Conroy was the point person for all of about 85 hours here, I think. So it'll be interesting to see what that means for his chances. You know,
he's the most natural one to come back, though.
Yeah, in terms of retaining that connection.
Would maintain some connection to the Northwest, because this is a staff coming in which it has no connection to the Northwest whatsoever.
At this point, no, yeah. So, you know, the one thing about hiring an assistant coach and a head coach in waiting in this case, as opposed to hiring someone who's been a head coach at a mid-major, is it's probably less likely that they're going to come in with their own assistants from where they were. You know, I don't think it's likely that he'll bring anyone else from the Syracuse staff. So that's you know, it'll be interesting. One thing to watch in terms of, you know, recruiting and maybe staff development and all that is that Hopkins, through Boeheim, was really involved with USA basketball, and that's a connection the Huskies haven't necessarily had in the past. Yeah, he was the coach of the select team, the young players that they bring into scrimmage against the national team before the 2012 Olympics, and then also involved in various roles because Boeheim has been an assistant to Mike Krzyzewski, I think dating back to when Coach Kate took that job, but at least through this last two Olympics.
So any other thoughts on Mike Hopkins, what the program will look like going forward?
Well, you know, to me, the biggest surprise of this hire is we talked about Coach Pete as a model for what Jen Cohen wanted to do here. And a big part of, I think, what the Huskies love about Chris Peterson is the fact that he does it, quote unquote, the right way in terms of running a very by the book program. So I'm surprised from that standpoint that they were willing to hire someone who is part of a coaching staff that, you know, was dinged for some very serious NCAA violations. They initially, you know, vacated a number of wins. Those were later restored, but Boeheim did have that 9-game suspension where Hopkins took over. It was the last 6 games they played of non-conference in the 2015-16 season, plus the first 3 games of conference play, and that was a pretty tough stretch for them where they went 4-5, but they basically won games against really weak foes at home, and then you know, lost to some good teams on the road: Georgetown, Pitt, Miami. Not surprising there. Lost at home in overtime to a Clemson team that was pretty good, and then also a 12-point loss at St. John's. That is the tougher one to explain out of that period he was in charge.
Well, and also he was an assistant coach when this happened. I mean, you can't take the full brunt of the blame for those recruiting violations.
Apparently the other name that's being mentioned, by the way, as an assistant coach is Tim O'Toole, who was an assistant at Syracuse, who then went a year ago to Cal under Konzo Martin and then might be available because Martin has now gone to Missouri.
Interesting.
So another person who would have ties to the West Coast, if not the Northwest in particular.
Yes. All that said, if you don't have any other thoughts, how would you, if you could pull out your trade grade machine, how would you grade this hire?
I would say somewhere in the B- C+ range. I think that as I look at this compared to, you know, some of the other names that was out there, it's not like there is, I think, rung very clear to anyone who listened to our original podcast after the decision to fire Romar. There was no one out there who grabbed me as, oh, this is going to be a slam dunk hire. And I don't think Mike Hopkins does either. I think they certainly could have done worse, but, you know, it's really kind of, when you have so little information about how someone's going to do as a head coach, it's really a wait and see situation. And you know, it does remind me, I would say, a great deal of Bob Bender, another person who was an assistant coach under, you know, a legendary college coach who was known for a particular style of play, didn't have any ties to the Northwest, or in his case, in Bender's case, even any ties to the West Coast. And Bender was able to, you know, put together a couple of teams that were very successful in the NCAA tournament, got got very fortunate to get Todd McCullough, an NBA caliber center who just happened to be available to them because of the fact that he was so overweight and playing in Canada in relative obscurity. And then, you know, paired that with a local guy and Donald Watson made some runs, but, you know, not the sustained success that certainly the Huskies are hoping for from this hire. How about you?
I mean, they're not the kind of program right now who could really have a slam dunk hire. Basically, the program is not at that point.
Which is why you probably don't fire the coaches bringing in one of the nation's best recruiting classes and is extremely popular and is so loyal that he gives a speech to the women's basketball team before they play in the NCAA tournament 72 hours after getting fired.
I have no idea who you're talking about. No.
That could be anyone.
But at the same time, I like it as a roll of the dice. Basically, he's somebody who the potential is endless and has learned under a coach who's built an excellent program in Syracuse. And I could see it being something that works out really well here.
I think a lot of how you feel about this hire, I mean, first off, it's going to depend how you felt about Lorenzo Romar. There were clearly some people that were just done with Lorenzo Romar, ready to move on. We did not fall in that category. The other thing it's going to depend on is probably your risk preference. If you're someone who sees, you know, the best case outcome for how this could work out, then I think you're going to like this hire a lot. I'm someone who tends to see, in terms of coaching changes, the worst case outcome. So I probably don't like it as much. The other comparison, and I think I brought this up on the last podcast, but I can't remember or not at this point, is when the Huskies fired June Doherty as their women's basketball coach. Now, at that point, Doherty had been a lot more successful. I think was even coming off an NCAA tournament appearance. But Todd Turner had the notion in mind that the athletic director at the time, that the Huskies should be a marquee women's basketball program and that they could hire a coach who would bring them to that point. It turned out that they were much lower in the pecking order than they thought, and they ended up hiring Tia Jackson as an unproven assistant at that point from a successful program. And it did not translate in that case. The program was wildly unsuccessful under her watch, and it wasn't until they brought in a successful mid-major coach in Kevin McGuff that they were able to get the program turned around and now have experienced great success under his former assistant who he brought with him and his replacement, Mike Nabors. So that's the worst case.
I like it as a roll of the dice. I mean, this is a program that hasn't been to the NCAA tournament in 6 years. The program probably needed a change of direction, and I like taking a little bit of a risk here that has very high upside at kind of turning around what Washington basketball is.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to find out what Washington basketball is. We've talked about this with football, really, in particular, where your philosophy is whatever your coach's philosophy is. So are Huskies fans now going to just love the zone?
Love the zone.
We have always loved the zone. Have never not loved the zone. So I don't know. Obviously, a lot more to learn as we get to to his press conference introducing him to the Seattle media, and then get into seeing how Mike Hopkins can do in terms of retaining this year's players and this year's recruiting class.
Yep.
So plenty more to cover as that process unfolds. But that'll wrap it up for us now. On that note, thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.